Mark 6, 1 to 13, and the theme being Jesus rejected at Nazareth. I think this text is an interesting text. I'm not sure why it stood out for me when I was preparing for this series, but somehow this text interested me and I thought I'll include this in the series. And this text actually is a break from the typical stories of Jesus, where Jesus goes around and he heals people, he does miracles. But in this particular text, we have a contrast to the usual story, right? And in this text, as we have read, Valine has read for us, the response to Jesus' ministry in this particular text, which is actually his hometown, it was not the best response to Jesus' ministry. And again, as I mentioned, it's contrasted to other towns where he's well received and he comes home to his hometown and then he's rejected. He's not received. So I think we can draw a lot of general statements about this. For example, you could say this happened because, you know, it's very hard to accept somebody you know so well, right? As a general statement, like, I know who he is. I know he was, I taught him in Sunday school. I know what kind of a boy he was. And come on, he cannot be what he's claiming to be, right? I mean, that can be some one of the reasons why. Or you could say it's easier to kind of love somebody from a distance, but when you actually get to know people, it's tougher to love people because we know them so well. We know their flaws. We know their personalities. We know their family connections. And we could say that as well. And those might well be true as well. But in this particular text, we are given a sneak peek into what the people of Nazareth were saying. And they were saying things to the effect of, isn't he that guy? Isn't he that carpenter or the son of the carpenter? Isn't he the son of Mary? And isn't his brothers, sisters with us? We know them. And so that's the kind of conversation that was going on. Just a quick reflection on what those comments probably meant. Carpenter, Jesus as a carpenter. In other words, he was unlearned. He was not the most sophisticated of persons, not the most cultured of persons. Isn't his brothers with us? Don't we know them? His sisters are with us. We know them so well. Isn't he the son of Mary? Some scholars say that this particular term, son of Mary, is rather unusual because usually they would say son of Joseph or son of Abraham or the father's name. But in this case, we have the mother's name. And some scholars say that it's probably a reference to Jesus as a son of Mary, meaning the rumors that he was illegitimate. We know that he was born from virgin birth, and it's probably a deliberate slur, you know, in the town, among the town people, to say Jesus, not saying anything, but he's a son of Mary, he's not a son of Joseph. And so some scholars say that this could be a slur at Jesus and all the rumors that was probably flying around. And also we know that Nazareth had some kind of a reputation as a small town where nothing really happens, to the point that when Jesus was introduced as Messiah in John, one of the disciples said, "What good can come out of Nazareth? That's just a small town. Like, what good can..." You might imagine New York or London or Edinburgh happening places, things happening from there. But Nazareth, like, it's just a small town in the backwaters of Judea. What good can come out of there? And so even the town itself, and even within that Nazareth, there seems to be some kind of stigma or some kind of, the kind of reaction that the people of Nazareth were having towards Jesus. And so Jesus was rejected. And Jesus was rejected not just because he came from that kind of a background. Actually, Jesus was rejected because of his claims. Jesus went around making big claims through his works. He went around forgiving sins. And the Jews know that nobody else can forgive sins but God. And so Jesus was making claims of his equal standing with God. He was healing people and he was making this very uncomfortable echoes of the Old Testament prophets. He was positioning himself as these personalities that they cannot simply swallow, knowing who Jesus was. And so Jesus was rejected because his claims and his background does not correlate. It doesn't match. Because Jesus was too simple. He was too ordinary. There's no glamour. There's no power or you know, there's no social, economic, intellectual capacity or capital that's visible with Jesus, right? He was a commoner. He's just like me. And how can he make these claims? And so the people of Nazareth could not receive him, and they rejected him. I think we must add, though, that even though he came to earth and he lived as in his simplicity, in his meekness, Jesus also walked in the power of God. He went around doing miracles. He was healing. He was forgiving sins. He was liberating people from their loneliness. He was doing all these miracles. So to be sure, Jesus manifested himself in meekness, but he was also walking in the power of God. And yet the problem was that the people of Nazareth could not see beyond this meekness. They could not see beyond the simplicity of Jesus, simplicity of Jesus' background. And they couldn't help but saying, isn't he that guy that we know? His sisters are with us. We know him. He used to come and collect wood from us, or, you know, like make up all this. You can make up all these lines, but how can he claim to all these things? We know him. And so they took offense at Jesus. How did Jesus respond to this? No doubt, I think he was disappointed. He was sorrowful about this. Elsewhere, we read that Jesus wept when he thought about Jerusalem and the way that Jerusalem rejected him. He wept for the unbelief of the people. And so no doubt Jesus must have been sorrowful. But Jesus also marveled at their unbelief. He was amazed at their unbelief, quite like the way he was amazed at the belief and the faith of the people that he healed. In the same way, he's also amazed at the unbelief. Just as Jesus was amazed at the unbelief, even the people were amazed at what he was saying. So there's a whole lot of amazement, a whole lot of marveling going on at one another. It's like some kind of, it's very interesting what's going on. And we saw that Jesus was unable to do miracles because of the unbelief, because they were not receptive to what Jesus was offering to them. And so Jesus could not perform miracles. And he went on to other villages, other places to continue teaching. The remarkable thing about Jesus' reaction here is that he was not forceful. He was quite gracious. And when the people rejected him, he moved on. He was not paternalistic about it. He was not like going, oh, come on, don't you know this is for your good? Don't you know you are small town people, Nazareth people, and you think you know better? And he's not cocky about it. He's not paternalistic about it. But he gives them the choice, he gives them that space, and he just moves on to other people who needed him. To be sure, we remind ourselves, he was marveling, he was sad, he was sorrowful, and he was compassionate, but he moved on, and he gave them space and choice to make their decision. Some scholars have said that this text is a text of unmiracle. Just as the other texts were texts of miracles, here is a text of unmiracle, because the people did not receive Jesus. And so this text, this story, it somewhat connects with the next bit of today's text, which is Jesus commissioning his disciples. And I hope I'll be able to communicate this well, because it's a little bit of we have to connect it a little bit. So I hope I'll be able to communicate this clearly. So when Jesus sends out his disciples in the next part of the passage, he sends them out in simplicity, and he sends them out with the teaching that they should respect the choice of the people as well, in the same way that he did. He came in simplicity, he respected the choice and the space of the people. In the same way, when Jesus sends out his disciples, he taught them the same principles as well, simplicity and choice. And I think this same principle undergirds the commissioning of the disciples and ultimately our commissioning as well. So let me just try to break that down, and hopefully this will make sense. First point being, simply trust the power of God. And when we say simply, it doesn't mean poverty. One of the superficial way to read the second part of the text is to say that Jesus is telling us to give up possessions, and it's about poverty, it's about asceticism. But I don't think that's the case. I think it's more about trusting in God rather than trusting in other things in our life. To trust in God and to have devotion to God. So in other words, we are called to go in our mission, not armed with techniques and resources and methods and trusting in our intelligence, our traditions, rather than that, to trust ultimately in God as we go and live our life in mission. In the same way that when Jesus sent out his disciples, he sent them out, don't take extra baggage, don't take extra sandals. Just go with what you need right now and go and do your work. In essentially telling them to not be hindered or burdened by other things that may bring you down, but to go and to go simply trusting in God, that God will provide for you, God will take care of you, God will lead you. And I was reflecting on this, and I realized that that's partly what's going on in our COVID-19 situation, where we are stripped of all the things that we would love to do, like gathering and singing and microphones and, you know, all this stuff. But we are removed from that, and we are forced to rely on God, like, to be creative, no doubt. And I think that's the thing, right? When we are not cumbered by techniques and all these fluffs, we can be more creative. We can be more, we can go easily. We can move easily, so to say. And I think that's what Jesus was telling his disciples. Do not go armed with all these techniques and all this stuff, but go trusting simply in God and in the power of the Holy Spirit. And I don't say this because I'm a critic of techniques and resources and all that. I mean, I'm doing a PhD, so that talks for itself. I think those have its place, but I think ultimately we trust in God. Ultimately, our trust is in Jesus, and we go simply trusting in the power of God in our life and in our mission. And by the way, just it's easy to miss this, but he also told them to trust in people. He said, when you go and somebody receives you, stay in your home, work with them, partner with them, rely on people who are with you. And he sends two by two also, as if you remember in the text. So he's like, rely on people who are with you, work together, partner, trust in God and trust in people. So that's the first principle that we see here, simply trust in the power of God. And secondly, the principle being witness and let the people choose. Witness and let the people choose. Our role is to witness. Our role is to tell people about Jesus, is to live our life as a life of witness. The response is up to the hearers, right? The response is up to them, just like even Jesus did that. We see that in the ministry of Jesus, we saw rejections, we saw acceptance, we saw people needing Jesus, and these are all responses to Jesus. And I was thinking that's probably for best as well, that we don't try to force the response to Jesus, because people are drawn to Jesus. People meet Jesus in their own ways, right? And in different points of their needs. My story is probably different from your story and your encounters with Jesus. It reminded me of some of my experiences in youth ministry in India. You know, there's this time when there are some really difficult in terms of ministry, okay? There are people who are trying to reach out and we're just railing about Bible study and reading Bible and prayer meeting and coming to church and all the evangelical stuff. And they reject that. And they move on. And then years later, I come to find out that they came to know Jesus. They received Jesus. From where? From a charismatic church. In a different way that we didn't do, you know. So me railing off in my own methods, in my own way, didn't work. Then they rejected, and then they moved on and accepted Jesus from another avenue. And I think that's the way people encounter Jesus, right? They come to Jesus from in different ways, in their own ways, and they're drawn to Jesus in different ways. And so the role for us is that we need to be compassionate, and we need to, once we have told or spoken and witnessed, we give them the choice. So simply trust the power of God and witness and let the people choose, just like Jesus did and just like Jesus told his disciples to do as well. So just a quick few practical reflections as I close. If you find yourself in the shoes of the townspeople of Nazareth, if you find yourself in the shoes of the Nazareth people, what would be the best way to deal with this? I think it would be to look at Jesus properly. Because Jesus, indeed, he comes in an unassuming way. He comes from a town in Judea. He comes as a son of a carpenter. Judea is an insignificant corner of the Roman Empire, hardly the hub of the world. And yet, he comes walking in the power of God. He comes walking in full of the Holy Spirit. And so the best response to skepticism would be to say, study his life. See the impact that he has had in this world through history. Get to know who he was, what he said, what he did, and his claims for our life. And leave it at that. And I think as you would say that, I think that's the same kind of appeal we make towards others as well, who are skeptical or who are almost rejecting of Jesus Christ. Get to know him, study his life properly, look at his life properly, look at Jesus. And just as Jesus simply trusted in God's power to speak for him, in the same way, we also do the same. We witness and we let people choose, and we trust simply in God's power and God, the Holy Spirit, to draw them to Christ. And I think that's Jesus modeled that, and I think that's what we are called as well to do, that we witness to people simply trusting in the power of God, because that's our whole call to power, call to fame, so to say. And as we do that, we just like the disciples experience, they were able to perform miracles in the same way in our life as well, as we simply trust in God, as we witness and let people choose. I think God will do his work and he will draw people to himself, and that's what we trust, what we believe. So that's a bit of reflection for this morning today, from Mark chapter 6. I pray that God will help us to understand it more in our life, not just theoretically, but as we live our life. So I give the time back to Ho Yan and team to lead us in singing.